Yankees and Mets are both in the championship series, but who are they going to face? We'll break it down on this episode of First Pitch. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, October 11th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock. Find him on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. You can find his podcast, the Philly Faithful Podcast, Faithful with a PH, wherever you get your podcast, and on YouTube. And Troy, we're going to talk about the New York Mets, who took down your Philadelphia Phillies to go to the NLCS. We're going to talk about Dodgers-Padres Game 5. But first, I want to get to the American League games from yesterday. The New York Yankees, in a close game with some back and forth, some jawing, some benches clearing, punched their ticket to the ALCS with a 3-1 win in Kansas City versus the Royals. And we still didn't necessarily see either like of Bobby Witt Jr. or Aaron Judge really be able to get the breakout that we were waiting for. But there was enough pieces around Aaron Judge, namely Giancarlo Stanton and Gerrit Cole, to take the win. What were your impressions of how this game unfolded and how things went for the New York Yankees?
Yeah, I mean, everything went more right for the Yankees than they did for the Royals. Gerrit Cole, he didn't have the strikeouts that you normally expect from him, but that's really
only like six whiffs or something like that.
Yeah, that's really been his whole season, really, since coming back from injury in the middle of the year. But without the strikeouts, he was pretty spot on and had a really good start. Seven strong innings before Aaron Boone turned it over to the pen. And it was just, it was a great outing from Gerrit Cole, and it helped lead the Yankees to victory in the championship series for the first time in a while. So,
yeah, this is something where neither team really took advantage of their opportunities that well, but the Yankees had a lot more opportunities and did a little bit better. The Royals, who picked up only six hits in this game, they go 0-for-2 with runners in scoring position. Salvador Perez had an out with two outs and a runner in scoring position. Michael Massey also did it. He also grounded them to a double play. They left four on base, whereas the Yankees only go 3-for-10 with runners in scoring position and leave seven on base, but they at least went 3-for-10 versus an 0-for, and it felt like that was the thing here. Gleyber Torres, kind of a throwback performance for him, goes 2-for-5 from the leadoff spot, scores a run, gets an RBI, gets a double off of Michael Wacha, gets an RBI later in the game. Just kind of almost a vintage Yankees performance. We even see Aaron Judge steal a base, I believe his first one of the postseason after Giancarlo Stanton did it the day before. And to me, like, a lot of credit to Aaron Boone. I think this is one of those games where, like, Boone gets a lot of blame, and some of it warranted, a lot of it not. Managers really don't have as big an impact on the game as we think they do. It's all on the margins, but he handled this one pretty right. Letting Cole go 7, going to Clay Holmes in the 8th, going to Luke Weaver in the 9th, choosing to, even though they didn't score, letting Giancarlo Stanton get on and then choosing to pinch run for him in the 8th. Just most of the buttons he pushed ended up working. Whereas it feels like for Kansas City, they really just, their last gasp was that Kyle Isbell fly ball was caught on the warning track, I think in the 8th inning, may have been the last gasp there. How surprising, I think, is this? Is this something where we kind of expected Kansas City to run out of gas eventually? Or is this something where we're still a little bit stunned that the Yankees actually won the thing and made it to the ALCS?
Yeah, it was just, like you said, it just came down to Aaron Boone pressing the right buttons at the right time. And that's not something we normally see from him. So good on him for that, for sure. And I don't think that the Royals would have made it to the World Series per se, but I definitely did have them getting past the Yankees. So congratulations to the Yankees for shocking me at the very least.
And I think that this kind of all comes back to that end of season offensive struggles we saw from the Royals. They were the worst offense in baseball in the month of September. They were missing Vinny Pasquantino during that whole stretch. He's not lit the world on fire here in the postseason. Did get a run in an RBI yesterday. Kind of came through finally. Scored Bobby Witt. I think that was the sixth inning. But this offense, like Tommy Pham was the majority of the offense. Batting seventh, he goes 3-for-3. I think all three hits were off of Cole. Outside of that, Michael Garcia gets one hit. He actually the Michael Massey double play. He gets tagged what he thinks is a little too hard at second base. That's what caused the benches to clear. No punches were thrown, but benches clear. A lot of guys jawing at me and holding me backs and things like that. And then Witt and Pasquantino back-to-back hits in the sixth. And that was really all the offense for Kansas City. And at this point, I don't really know. It's obviously very, very, very early. I don't really know what fixes Kansas City has to manufacture more offense. They're going to return most of these guys. Yuli Gurriel's, he was a last-minute replacement. They'll have probably a new first baseman or DH because Pasquantino is probably going to go back to first base. Tommy Pham is going to be on his way out of here. He was an expiring deal at right field. But other than that, this is the majority of the team that they have, and it just feels like when they're on, they're capable of doing a lot. But when they're not on, like last night, the offense looks kind of helpless unless they're being carried by Bobby Witt and Vinny P.
Yeah, I hate to bring it back to the Phillies, but it's kind of like the Phillies. The offense just looks kind of helpless unless it's being carried by Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber. And yeah. They have to – I know that they're not really known for spending money in free agency, but they might need to think about
bringing
in.
They did this year.
Yeah, they did this year.
But, credit to them. They did this year, but that's the exception more so than the rule.
Right, and I think that they probably need to spend a little bit more in this offseason to make a few upgrades, especially with Tommy Pham leaving and guys like that. They need to the pitching's there for them. The pitching is there. They just need to improve their offense overall across the board, other than Bobby Witt and Pasquantino, of course.
Yeah. Do you want to have a quick question before we move on here? The decision to bring in closer Lucas Erceg in the fifth inning. This is something. It's a quick two outs, runner on first. John Birdie gets a single, puts Verdugo on third. Gleyber Torres singles, scores Verdugo. It's now 2-0 Kansas City. Erceg comes in to replace Michael Wacha, gets Juan Soto to fly out to end the inning. And then, like we've talked about so many times, I feel like this week they ask Erceg to come back out for the sixth, needing some more innings out of him because he's their closer. You can't burn him for one out. Leadoff double to Aaron Judge. After a ground out, Judge scores off of Giancarlo Stanton single. Then Jazz walks before Anthony Volpe hits into a double play to end the inning. Was in an elimination game, was asking Erceg to go a second or to come back for another inning something that you had to do, or was the right decision to just go to someone else that was not Erceg in the fifth?
He's their best option, yes, but I still like you said, it's a running theme for this playoffs is just bringing relievers in to get one or two outs to end an inning and then letting them sit for a while and bringing them back out for a second inning. And I don't like that decision really ever, especially in the postseason, because the pressure is just increased tremendously in the postseason over the regular season. And mm-hmm. especially in a win or go home game, I don't like the decision. I think they should have went to someone else personally.
Yeah. I mean, on Angel Zerpa, maybe Schreiber, there had to be somebody else you could have used. Or if you went to Erceg, I don't think you can bring him back out for another inning simply because those high leverage relievers aren't always used to, one, getting up that early, and two, doing that situation where they go multiple innings like that. Again, coming in the dirty inning, adrenaline dump, and all of that, and you know, in the dugout, and then going back out is always tough. But yep. Either way, Yankees advance. They will play in the ALCS. That is scheduled to start on Monday night, 7:37 p.m., and they will play the winner of Guardians and Tigers. Those two teams faced off yesterday in Detroit. Cleveland wins this one 5-4 in a very back-and-forth game, setting up a winner-take-all on Saturday. For as much blame as we gave, I guess I gave, Steven Vogt on yesterday's show about going to the pinch hitters too early, I really think he managed this well. Kyle Manzardo stays in the game until the seventh inning. He puts in David Fry in the seventh. Fry hits a home run. So obviously scores a run, couple RBI there. And then, that's a two-run homer. Turns around in the ninth, and I think they confirmed after the game, Vogt called the squeeze play, the squeeze bunt by Fry that scored what ended up being the winning run in the ninth for Cleveland to force a game five. Was this more so Vogt's decisions worked, or the Tigers kind of ran out of the pitching chaos in this one?
That's a little both. I think Vogt, like Giancarlo Stanton the other day, I think Vogt listened to our podcast yesterday and said, you know what, I can't pinch hit so early. But he definitely made better decisions in last night's game, and they worked. I mean, he left Manzardo in. Manzardo got a hit, and it also doesn't hurt that Jose Ramirez got a home run, his first of the postseason. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the pitching chaos, it's great for a time, but it's it can apparently win you a wild card series, but it was never going to win a World Series. And it may not have even, if they get to the championship series, it probably won't get past that, because you can't win when you're just pitching from the bullpen the entire time. You have to have guys that can go five, six innings on a regular basis to not tire out your entire bullpen every game.
Yeah. This is something, Reese Olson, 4 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, 1 walk to 4 strikeouts. But after he comes out, every reliever except for the very last one gives up a run. Holton gives up 1 run over 2 innings. Bo Brisky gives up, I think, his first runs of the entire postseason, pitching just a third of an inning. Jackson Job comes out for the eighth. They ask him to come back for the ninth. That doesn't necessarily work. They can't get a second inning out of him. They have to go to another reliever to close out the ninth inning. Down at that point, 5-3, the Tigers do get one run in the bottom half, but just can't quite get it done. Stephen Kwan, I think, doesn't get a lot of credit across baseball because he's not a huge power guy. But we saw him make a diving catch the other day. He goes 3-for-5 in this one and scores twice. He gets driven in twice on these. He's batting .500 with a 1.119 OPS in the postseason. And I'm not going to say he's been the most valuable Cleveland Guardian, but it really feels like he's probably one of the more underrated players on this team. And in the postseason, I'm at the point of, even if they can win this game five, which they'll have to take on Tarik Skubal to do it, I just wonder if they have enough horses to move on and get past a Yankees squad. Both of Cleveland's wins in this series have come when the pitching chaos has completely fallen apart, right? Game one, they just obliterated Detroit. Now this game here to force a game five. It feels like both these teams are a little bit flawed. Cleveland can't consistently score enough runs. They did a good job of manufacturing runs, right? You know, pulling the right buttons, getting the pinch hit, getting the squeeze play. But it feels like they can't reliably manufacture enough runs, where it feels like Detroit is running a very fine line on the pitching does it really matter which these two teams wins when it comes to taking on the Yankees in the ALCS?
At this point, I don't think so. I think that it's going to pretty clearly be the Yankees moving on to the World Series for the American League. Just from what you said, the Guardians can't consistently produce offense outside of Stephen Kwan, and then the Tigers, like we said, they have really one starting pitcher and then the bullpen. And yeah, even though the Yankees rotation hasn't been great, having a rotation period is better than having one guy and a hope and a prayer.
Yeah, it feels like the margin for error is a little bit better in that situation. Again, this series will wrap up on Saturday night, 8:08 p.m. Eastern on TBS. Tariq Skubal announces a starter for Detroit. We do not have an announced starter as of yet for Cleveland. We'll see what happens. But before that, we're going to get what's going to be a fantastic matchup tonight. San Diego Padres going to L.A. to take on the Dodgers in a winner-take-all, 8:08 p.m. Eastern on Fox. And what's really cool here, according to MLB.com, Sarah Langs, who I don't think is ever wrong, this is the first time in postseason history that two Japanese starting pitchers have faced off. Yu Darvish goes for the Padres. Yoshinobu Yamamoto goes for the Dodgers. They are in LA, but it feels like you have more confidence in Darvish than Yamamoto. Who should be the favorite tonight to move on and take on our beloved New York Mets in the NLCS?
I think it's still the Padres that should be the favorite. They have the deeper lineup. They have probably the better pitcher going tonight, at least in the playoffs. He's been better for sure. And they have the much, much, much deeper bullpen, being one of, if not the best bullpen in baseball. For me, it's the Padres that are the favorites in tonight's game.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. This is something where I feel like you have a couple Dodgers who have had some success in their careers against Yu Darvish. Freddie Freeman is 2-for-5 with a homer, if he's able to play, though. Max Muncy is 3-for-6 with a homer. He'll be either playing third base or first base. But there's just not a lot of experience here. Nobody other than, like, Muncy's the only guy who has more than 5 at-bats against Yu Darvish. Yep. Shohei Ohtani is 0-for-3 in his career against Yu Darvish. Whereas you look over at Yamamoto, it's obviously very small sample sizes, but a lot of these guys, I feel like, have had some success off of Yamamoto in their careers. You feel better about Darvish's current condition than you do Yamamoto. He had that really rough start to, you know, when he made that game one start. And the arguably the hottest player in the entire postseason, not by batting average, but by OPS, is Fernando Tatis Jr. He leads the entire postseason. He's got 4 home runs in 6 games, an OPS of 1.759, a 500 batting average. It's absolutely absurd. Yep. I want to point out the second best OPS and the best batting average for anybody who has at least 8 at-bats in the postseason, Michael Harris II.
Hey,
5-for-8, a homer, batting .625 with a 1750 OPS. But
what's Tatis he doing again?
The same thing your Phillies are at. Sitting home watching this whole thing. There we go. But okay, so gonna be a really great matchup. The big question here, obviously, does Freddie Freeman play? They knew he was not going to play in game 4. They knew that morning. They put him in the lineup anyway. They then turned around and scratched him. Whereas Mike Schilt of the Padres directly alluded to that and said, there's no gamesmanship. We're not trying to mess with you. Here's our lineup. Here's our starting pitcher. Beat him if you can. I love it. This has been a chippy series. We saw Dodgers fans throwing things at the Padres players. We've seen jawing back and forth. We saw Dave Roberts trying to get Manny Machado suspended for throwing a ball towards the dugout. This feels like it's a Padres win. And if that's the case, how mad do you think the MLB corporate offices are in New York that they don't get a Dodgers-Yankees World Series?
Yeah, they've got to be pretty mad about that. There's it's as far as market and hype goes, that's the two biggest teams in baseball consistently year in and year out. And especially after last season's Rangers Diamondbacks World Series, which was one of the lowest rated playoff series ever. And to have the opportunity of the Dodgers and Yankees still this late in the postseason, and then it be squashed in the DS by the Padres. They definitely can't be happy about that.
Absolutely. Okay. So either way, assuming it's Padres or Dodgers, I want to talk about the Mets because we didn't really discuss them yesterday. I wanted to talk more about the Phillies being eliminated before we got to the Mets, partly because I was just happy to see it, partly because I knew I had you here. I didn't know if I'd have you here today or not. But let's talk about these Mets because, one, they were not expected to go this far. They were not expected to be in the NLCS. When they traded away guys midseason last year, traded away Max Scherzer, traded away Justin Verlander and all these veterans, they publicly said 2025 was the competitive window they were going into. It feels like the reason that they are doing this year is the pitching was a lot better than expected. And especially from the rotation, your Sean Manea, your Jose Quintana, your Luis Severino. For the NLCS, no matter who you're facing, how do you set those guys up? How do you deploy those three guys? In what order do you start them in an NLCS?
I would probably go Quintana and then... Suzuki and the, it is Suzuki, right? Singa. I'm sorry.
Singa.
Kodai Singa. Yeah. Quintana, Singa, and Manaea, 1 through 3 in that
and
order.
Severino being the fourth guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. See,
And Severino's had a fantastic postseason. So they've had a really, really good showing from their rotation.
Yeah. See, I think for me, I don't think I'm counting on Singa to start. Right, he's made one start. He pitched 2 innings, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts, gave up a run on a hit. It was a solo homer. I think I might, I mean, unless I maybe use Senga as like an opener, but I think I'm riding the trio of Severino, Manea, and Quintana. And the question for me is going to be how do I deploy them and how can I use Senga to relieve the load on Edwin Diaz? Because it feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think the only reliever that's allowed more, like for the Mets, that's allowed more runs than Diaz in the postseason has been Phil Maton. He's allowed 4 runs on 7 hits and 2 2/3. Diaz has allowed, I think, 3 runs on just over 3 innings. Yes, he has 1 save and 2 opportunities, but he did blow one. And I feel like at this point, maybe you save Senga, you keep him out of the rotation, and you let him be another high leverage guy that you can go to in place of Edwin Diaz. So you're not asking Diaz to come back out for another inning. You're not asking Diaz, you know, you're not having to, like the Royals did yesterday, you're not having to pop him in the 5th inning when you're in a jam. You can go to a guy that's got great swing and miss stuff like Senga, got that ghost fork and great stuff, provided he can acclimate to warming up mid-game versus a start. It feels like I want to ride with that trio of Manea, Quintana, Severino using the off days we have. And I want to be able to keep Senga to relieve the load on a bullpen that hasn't been locked down. David Peterson hasn't allowed runs in 3 games. He's pitched 6 1/3 innings with no runs allowed. But I feel like maybe Reed Garrett too, but every other reliever outside of those two has given up runs in this postseason. And if you stick with the John Smoltz theory I always talk about, 3 hot hitters, 3 hot starters, 3 hot relievers. You can see your 3 hot starters, your 3 hot hitters, Francisco Lindor, Mark Vientos, Pete Alonso has 3 home runs this postseason. You've got that. But your 3 hot relievers, I don't know who are your 3 right now. And I think if the Mets don't advance out of the NLCS, that's probably the reason why. And if I can use Senga to reinforce that bullpen, it feels like that's the best decision. But I could be off base here. It feels to me like you got to find a way to get more help in the back end.
Yeah, no. I like that. For me, Senga would have been like an opener, like you said, mm-hmm. and then turn it over to a guy like Tyler Megill or David Peterson. But yeah, no, I like your idea there much better for the Mets. using him as kind of a opposite of Edwin Diaz there. I think that would work much better for them.
Yeah. And looking at the offense, I mean, we know the guys who have been great. Obviously we've talked about it. Mark Fientos has been great. Pete Alonso has been, the batting average isn't amazing, right? But 273 is still pretty good for Pete Alonso. Yeah. You know, he's got three home runs. Francisco Lindor batting 259, but he's been absolutely clutch when they've needed him to be clutch. Jesse Winker, I feel like, hasn't gotten a ton of run. He's only got 9 at-bats in this postseason. He's 2 for 9. He's hit a home run. He has a triple. Drove in 3. Who needs to step up in this offense around that 3 or 4 guys if they want to have a chance of moving on to the World Series? And I'm going to give you, I guess, a couple options here. Is it a guy like a Francisco Alvarez who is 4 for 26? Is it more important for him to step up, or for a guy like a Jose Iglesias who is, I think, 6 of 29 maybe with no extra base hits? Who is it more important that they get better performances out of if the Mets want to move on to the World Series?
I think just looking at those two players and their playing styles, Francisco Alvarez is more of a power guy, whereas Jose Iglesias is a contact hitter, drive the ball into the gap. I think you got to have Jose Iglesias, especially for the late innings runners in scoring position. If he comes up, he has to be able to put the ball in play and mm-hmm. bring those runners in and help them score, especially if they're going to be going up against the Padres, as I think they will be. They're going to need all the runs they can get off that pitching staff and against the Padres offense. So for me, I think it's Jose Iglesias.
I'm really glad you said Iglesias, because I think I feel the other way. I think if you face the Padres, I don't know if you can count on stringing together 3 or 4 or 5 hits to get runs in. And I think Francisco Alvarez, that power could be a game changer. You look at their home runs, they've got 8 home runs this postseason, 3 from Alonso, 2 from Vientos, 1 apiece from Winker, Lindor, and Brandon Nimmo. Nobody else has a home run. The only extra base hit outside of that duo, or that group of players up top, is a Tyrone Taylor double, and he's only 3 of 23. And I think getting Francisco Alvarez going, him being able to give you an extra base hit or give you a home run, is, especially when you're into that Padres bullpen, that's more of a game changer than getting Iglesias on and then hoping you can get another hit to drive him in, right? Iglesias, he hasn't attempted a stolen base this postseason. I don't have this regular season stats in front of me. I don't feel like he's much of a stolen base guy. He can do it. He's not much of a stolen base guy. And so it feels like you got to get more production out of Francisco Alvarez, especially because he's playing all the time. You have other options you can throw in at second base. Luis Angel Acuña maybe could go and, you know, he's gotten in 6 games. He only has 2 at bats, but like you can make moves at second base. You're not putting in Luis Torrens. He didn't have a single at bat this postseason. You're not legitimately running with him. Alvarez is your guy in every single game. And I feel like you got to get a little more out of him. All 4 of his hits have been singles, 1 RBI, no walks to 9 strikeouts. He's got to do more if you want to advance through the NLCS and get to the World Series.
Yeah, no. You're absolutely right as well. Both of those guys really need to step up. Yeah. They need all hands on deck. It's a tough, if they are facing the Padres, it's a tough pitching staff. And I did look up Jose Iglesias steals. He had 6 steals this season.
Okay, so not much of a, I mean, he can do it, but not much of a stolen base threat. If a guy's not stealing double digit, I'm not thinking he's gonna take off outside of a pass ball.
And that was also in only 85 games in the regular season.
True. Okay. So bowling season, he could have had double digits. You know, it feels like again, that Dodgers Padres, they will play tonight. The winner of that game will advance on, and they will host the Mets on Sunday. That game will be at 8:15 p.m. Eastern. That'll be broadcast on Fox. Fox has the NLCS. TBS has the ALCS. This has been First Pitch for Friday, October 11th. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. You can follow him, Troy B Baseball, to get Troy Brock, his podcast, the Philly Faithful Podcast with a PH, wherever you get your podcast, and on YouTube. We will be back to preview these these two championship series matchups. Until then, this has been First Pitch.